Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The history of the 20th century shows clearly that Winston Churchill was one of its giant figures. Missouri has a piece of that history, for it was here that he followed his exploits as a wartime leader in Britain with the famous Iron Curtain speech at Westminster College in Fulton. Neither that speech nor his wartime leadership might have happened if his early years in an earlier war, the Boer War, had turned out differently. That period is chronicled in Candace Millard's book, Hero of the Empire, The Boer War, A Daring Escape, and The Making of Winston Churchill. Candace Millard joins us by phone from Kansas City. Candace, so nice to talk to you once again.
Yeah, it's nice to talk to you, too. Thanks for having me back on the show.
Wonderful job on the book. I've read it, enjoyed it, and many people in our newsroom here have done the same and say the same thing. So congratulations.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to start, if you don't mind. You know, I think a lot of people don't really understand the Boer War, what it was all about, why it happened at all. But can you give us a very quick thumbnail as to what was going on and why Winston Churchill might have been involved?
Yeah, of course. So the Boers, first of all, were a group of largely Dutch descendants who had been living in southern Africa for centuries. And they just wanted to be left alone. And they had developed their own language. They had moved deeper and deeper into the African interior in an effort to get away from the British, who, you know, were colonizing all around them. And the British were happy to let them do that until they discovered gold and then diamonds in their territory. And so the British started moving in and cutting them off from the sea. And it just became more and more untenable for the Boers until the Boers finally just issued an ultimatum telling the British Empire to either stand down or prepare for the war. And the British were thrilled for an excuse to go to war, and so they just kind of let the deadline for the ultimatum pass with, you know, little more than a sneer, and they were off.
They got more than they bargained for, didn't they?
They did. You know, they were used to colonial wars. Obviously, they had this enormous empire all around the world, and they had war after war after war, but with usually a very different kind of enemy, enemies that, you know, didn't have access to and couldn't afford sophisticated weapons. And so they thought of this as just another little colonial war. But the Boers were very different. They had seen this coming for a while, and so they had been stockpiling weapons, going to Europe, especially Germany, and getting better weapons than the British had. But more than that, they were incredibly skilled fighters, incredibly skilled horsemen and shooters, and they knew this terrain very, very well, and the British had no idea what they were up against.
It was guerrilla warfare. It was an early stage of that kind of tactic, wasn't it?
That's right, it was. And the British just weren't prepared for it. You know, they had just recently stopped wearing the red coats. They called this the khaki war because they had just kind of reluctantly begun pulling their army into the modern world, forcing them to wear khaki. But they still fought in these sort of perfect, precise lines. And they were just serving their men up for slaughter to the Boers, who were completely invisible, this very, very dangerous enemy. And, you know, it really changed the British Empire. I mean, they thought, oh, this war is going to last a couple of months, and it lasted almost 3 years. And the British Army going into it was very different from the British Army coming out of it. They learned quite a lesson.
Boy, we've heard that song before in more modern times, haven't we?
Yes, we have, but we seem to be doomed to repeat it.
Yeah. You know, Winston Churchill, of course, was chomping at the bit to get over there and get involved in this thing.
He was. So he was only 24 years old, but this was the fourth war he had taken part in three different continents. He was incredibly ambitious. He had already run for parliament and lost. He had already written three books, including his first and only novel. So he was just, he wanted to succeed. He wanted to be famous. He wanted to be powerful. He wanted to be the Prime Minister of Great Britain, and he knew that he was destined for greatness. And he thought that the best way to get there would be through war. He called war the glittering gateway to distinction.
Well, he had served in the military prior, as you've indicated, but he was not in the military here. He was a journalist.
That's right. So he had left the military because it was too slow. He wasn't getting where he wanted to go fast enough. And so he had quit to so that he could run for parliament. And as he said, as I said, he lost his first election. And so then this war comes up and he thinks, okay, here's another opportunity to prove myself, to become, you know, a household name, become famous. And then this will be my gateway to power and to another election. And so what he did is he went as a journalist. He was already an incredibly gifted and prolific writer. He while fighting in these other wars, he had also been covering them as a journalist. So every publisher in England knew him and wanted him. And he ends up going as a correspondent for the Morning Post, and he becomes the best paid correspondent England had ever had.
And he traveled in luxury. He had a valet, as I recall, and brought along his own booze.
He did. So, you know, he was willing to risk his own life. He was actually very, very brave. But he thought, you know, why suffer? Why not go in comfort? And so he not only had this great salary from the Morning Post, but they gave him this huge expense account, which I don't think they actually realized how much he would be buying. So he bought kind of all this fancy equipment. And then, yeah, he bought scotch and wine and all this stuff that he had shipped and was waiting for him in Africa.
He is compared early in your book to P.T. Barnum in terms of his ability to self-promote.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And as you might imagine, in Victorian England, especially in the world he traveled in, and he was born into the highest ranks of British aristocracy, and then he was in the military, and he was seen as like a, you know, a medal hunter, someone who was a self-promoter, and that was looked down upon. But I always think of it as a little bit of the American in him. You know, his mother was this beautiful American-born woman, Jenny Jerome, and she was always the toast of London society. And he had that push in him. He had that hunger for attention and fame and power.
She is worthy of a book herself, I think. I mean, there is so much that you brought out about her in the book that I wanted more, because quite a character and quite a lady about town.
She was. I mean, as I say, she was incredibly beautiful and got a lot of attention for that. But she was also really, really smart. She was funny and quick-witted and just had everybody sort of swirling around her. And Churchill and his younger brother, Jack, you know, adored her. But he said he adored her, but from at a distance, you know, because he was sent, as many children were, certainly in his sort of placement in the British hierarchy at that time, where he was sent to boarding school when he was very young and was kind of left there. You know, his father was Chancellor of the Exchequer, leader of the House of Commons, so he was very busy with his political life, and his mother was very busy with her social life, and they just never went to see him. And so although he adored her, it wasn't until he became an adult, a young adult, and was interesting that she took an interest in him. And she really opened a lot of doors for him. You know, she had all these connections to very powerful men, and every time he wanted a post somewhere in the world to try to get those medals and get that attention, she helped make it happen for him.
Just going to jump forward a little bit here, because I want to get to what is really the guts of your book, and that is his capture in the war and ultimate escape. But he did have a chance to prove his heroic potential, did he not, once he got into the fray in South Africa?
Very, very quickly. So he arrived on the same ship as Buller, who was the commander-in-chief, but he realized right away it was going to take them a long time to get to the front because he had, you know, all these horses and equipment and men. So he quickly got there himself, and just a few days after he was just outside of the front, he boarded an armored train, which they were using at that time to try to do reconnaissance. And it seemed like, you know, well, that's an armored train. That's a pretty safe place to be. But it was such an easy target for the Boers. You know, it's this kind of lumbering train on these tracks. They know where it's going. They know it has to come back. So when he was on that train, it was attacked by a group of Boers. And several men were killed. And Churchill, 24 years old, one of the very few, I think there were maybe two other civilians on this train, he took over. He jumped out and immediately took charge of the defense of this train, running back and forth, shouting orders while they're under this incredible hailstorm of bullets and shells, and there are people horribly wounded and dying all around him. And these men, these sort of legitimate uniformed officers with their commander right there, listened to Churchill, and they took his direction. And the men who made it out alive all credited Churchill's resourcefulness and bravery for saving their lives. But Churchill, unfortunately, was captured and taken as a POW.
Yeah, and that created a different kind of problem, obviously, many different kinds of problems, because his father, as you report in the book, had been very, very critical of the Boers in years past, and they knew that. And here was the son.
They did. They did. They knew exactly who he was. Not only was he famous because he was the son of a lord, but he was the son of a man they reviled, because, as you said, his father had been in South Africa just a few years earlier and had made fun of the Boers for being backward and being uneducated and rough, and he rightfully criticized the way that they treated native Africans, as he should have. But he was really, really dismissive and scornful of them, and he wrote these letters that were published in England, and the Boers saw them, and they hated him. And so now they have his son in their clutches, and they're going to watch him very, very carefully. And Churchill knows that. But he's determined to escape from the very beginning, from the moment he's captured, because he's so angry with himself and so frustrated because he feels like he's going to lose out on all this possibility for adventure and advancement that this war could offer.
Well, that's a great part of your story. I'm going to take a break now, and we'll pick it up with that part of the tale when we come back. I'm talking with Candice Millard. She's the author of Hero of the Empire, The Boer War, A Daring Escape, and The Making of Winston Churchill. We'll come back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. We'll continue our conversation with Candice Millard in just a moment. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Pfizer is starting construction on a new research and development facility in Chesterfield. The company says the $200 million project will create more than 80 new jobs. The City of St. Louis Citizen Advisory Committee will host a forum tonight to get public input on the search for a new police chief. The 13-member committee was appointed by Mayor Lyda Crewson to serve in an advisory role to the city during that process. And Illinois House Democrats have advanced a statewide property tax freeze to appease the Republican governor and get a budget before Saturday's legislative deadline. Governor Bruce Rauner has insisted that property taxes be held in check as part of the budget deal. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation with Candice Millard, author of Hero of the Empire. That's about Winston Churchill and the Boer War. Candice, I'll again fast forward a little bit because time is our enemy in a conversation like this. He spends a little time in a prison and finally arranges with some fellow inmates to escape. He goes over the wall. They don't. Let's pick it up from there. He's all by himself outside the wall.
That's right. So it had been, he had two friends there who had made a plan to escape by, they found a corner of this prison wall that was dark when the electric lights came on at night, and they thought if a guard turns his back at just the right moment, they could get over. Unfortunately, Churchill gets over, and the other two can't. They get caught, and so they're stuck there, and they can't get over, and he can't get back in. And the problem is that they have all the supplies. So he's stuck there. He doesn't have food or a map or a compass or a weapon. He doesn't speak the language. He doesn't really have the whole plan because they didn't tell him everything. And so there he is facing almost 300 miles of enemy territory by himself with no provisions and no help of any kind. And so he doesn't really have a choice. He kind of has to give it a try. But being Churchill, he would have anyway. You know, he's determined to try his luck. And so he sets out on this incredible journey. It's unbelievably dangerous because, as we were talking about earlier, I mean, not only would the Boers be enraged if anyone escaped, but especially Winston Churchill, the son of Lord Randolph Churchill. And they're humiliated and they're enraged and they're determined to catch him. So they scour the South African veld looking for him. And if they catch him, there's a very, very real risk that they will kill him.
You know, I just want to back up one second because you said something that I think is most interesting about his personality, and that is that the fellow inmates didn't tell him all of the plan because they were afraid he would spill the beans.
That's right. So he had some of his own plans for escape, but his were, you know, really almost ridiculous. They were very grandiose, again, which is Churchill's personality. So his plan was he was going to take over the prison. This was an officer's prison. Then he was going to take over the prison where they're keeping the soldiers. And then he was going to take over all of Pretoria, which is the Boers' capital. And then he was going to capture the Boers' president, and he was going to end the war. So that's his very elaborate scheme. And he was talking to people about it, and they're all just kind of dismissing him. And then he overheard his friends, these two men, talking about a very different, very quiet kind of escape. And he wanted in on it. And at first they were like, no way. There's no way. First of all, you're too famous. Secondly, you talk too much. You'll tell everybody what our plan is, which he did. And then third, you're really not in great shape. So we don't think you can make it over this 300 miles, through this 300 miles of enemy territory. And so so the man who had actually invited him to be on the armored train was one of these guys who was planning at Ulmer Halden. And he felt kind of guilty because he was like, it's kind of my fault that Churchill was captured in the first place. And he says to Churchill, look, we don't want you to come with us, but I'll let you just make the decision. And Churchill, of course, says, I'm coming. And then when he gets over, these guys are stuck in. And so then they can't use the plan. Then they're stuck and they can't escape. And he's out there on his own.
Well, we should point out that at that time, he was not the portly gentleman that we're all familiar with because of his later years. He was a strapping young fellow. And you say they didn't think he was in good shape, but he looked okay to me from the pictures I've seen.
Yeah. And that's one of the great things about this story is we know Winston Churchill so well, but when you say the name Winston Churchill, you think of this guy who's overweight and balding and he's chewing on a cigar and, you know, has a whiskey in his hand. And if you look at this picture of him from this time in his life when he's 24 and he turns 25 in this POW camp, you almost can't recognize him because he's thin and young and he's got this red hair. And yeah, he has so much adventure in him. And we think of Winston Churchill as, you know, sending young men into war. But he threw himself into these incredible dangerous situations again and again and again. So, yes, he was young and thin and he had a lot more energy than later in life. But he was still been sitting around for a month in this prison. He was depressed and frustrated. And he wasn't sort of keeping up and keeping in shape like the other men.
Boy, the angels were with him, were they not, once he struck out on his own and some of the decisions he had to make and some of the people that helped him, he was really lucky.
That's absolutely true. And that's something I think we have to acknowledge with a lot of these people. And it was true of Theodore Roosevelt. You know, I think of him in the Spanish-American War, of this famous charge up Kettle Hill. It's astonishing that he survived that, you know, and you think he was brave and he you know, was smart and all of that is true. And the same is true for Churchill. But he was also really, really lucky. You know, there were a lot of brave and smart and resourceful men who died in those situations. So you have to have that element of luck and you have to acknowledge it. And Churchill certainly had it in his escape from the POW camp.
You make some reference in the book, too, that if I remember, it was a reporter who made a comparison between Teddy Roosevelt and Churchill. Valid comparison?
Yes, absolutely. They were very, very much alike, both incredibly brilliant, incredibly ambitious and brave and a little reckless. but with an end in mind. You know, they both knew that they were destined to lead. And I think it's funny because they actually met and really didn't like each other. And I think it's because they were too much alike.
Well, it's interesting to think of it in those terms. Getting back to his trek to avoid the Boers, it's amazing the segment where he knocks on a door and gets help, and it's precisely the right door, precisely the right time.
Yeah, it's, again, this incredible story of luck, you know, just shining on him. So he's hungry and he's scared. And at one point, he even drops to his knees and prays for help. And he was not a religious man, but he's young. He has his whole life ahead of him. And he knows that the Boers are bearing down on him. And so at one point, he's jumping in and off of trains, and he's hiding in culverts and groupings of trees. And he sees in the distance some fires. And he thinks it's an African village, and he thinks he'll go there for help. But he gets closer, and he realizes it's a colliery. And he thinks, okay, I'm just going to take a chance. And he knocks on this door, and by this incredible stroke of luck, he knocks on the door of one and maybe a very, very small group of Britons who have been allowed to stay in the Transvaal in this Boer Republic since the war started, because they needed this guy. John Howard was his name. They needed him to run this colliery during the war, and so they let him stay. And it just so happens that that's the door that Winston Churchill knocks on.
Was his escape by this time known in Britain? I know ultimately it had to become known, but while he was on the lam, as it were, did the people in Britain know that he had escaped?
They did, absolutely. It was everybody was talking about it. He became a national sensation. So everything he had wanted his whole life and that he thought he would get on the battlefield, this happened. So at first he thought that this is the worst thing that could happen to him, being taken as a POW, but it ended up being sort of the foundation for his life, certainly the foundation of his political life, because it made him famous. It made him a national hero, and everybody in South Africa and everybody in England were watching and waiting, and nobody thought he would make it out alive.
It has all the makings of a great escape movie, if I can put it that way. Tell us about what happened when he got to the border.
So he ends up getting to what's now Mozambique, was then Portuguese East Africa, and he makes it incredibly. He makes it to the British consulate there, and he steps up to the secretary, and he's been hiding on a train. And he's filthy, filthy, covered in coal dust, and he demands to see the consul general. And this secretary sort of sneering at him, saying, "Well, come back tomorrow, and I'll see if I can get an appointment for him, for you." And he's infuriated, and he steps back, and he yells, and he demands to see the consul general. And a window opens, and it's the consul general himself. And he thinks, "Well, who is this crazy, dirty young man?" And he races down, and he asks him his name, and he immediately realizes this incredible feat. And Churchill is an instant hero, and he is. That's the title of the book, Hero of the Empire. That's what he had always wanted to be, and that's what he becomes in that instant.
And what was his reception like when he finally got home?
Huge. I mean, there's huge, huge excitement and interest in him. And he, you know, he's a very savvy young man, and he quickly runs for Parliament again. And this time he wins, and that launches his political career.
You know, this is a question I ask biographers often, Candace. Let me ask it of you. After doing all this research on Winston Churchill and keeping in mind the quirks of his personality and what have you, did you like him?
I did. I thought he was irresistible. But, you know, I would always laugh with my husband because I was like, I think he would probably drive me crazy if he were my friend, you know, because he was so self-involved, you know, and so self-impressed. But at the same time, he had this wonderful ability to laugh at himself. He was very self-aware, too. He realized how self-involved and self-impressed he was, and he found it amusing, but he also found it irresistible. He was so determined, and he believed in himself. And I did, you know, I'm going to miss him. It was a joy to work on this. He was so funny, even at that age. And that's what one of the most surprising things to me is, I don't know what you were like at 24, 25 years old, but I had no idea who I was, who I wanted to be, how I would get there. And he did. He already knew. And if you read anything he's written, his letters, his dispatches from the field, his diaries, he was incredibly articulate, brilliant, funny, everything that we think of when we think of Winston Churchill 40 years later.
Well, one of the great ironies I've always thought is the fact that his performance during World War II is unquestioned, unparalleled, and yet the Brits turned on him immediately after the war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they were done with war, and they think to him he symbolized war, and they're hoping that they could avoid it in the future if he wasn't in the mix. And, you know, I don't think, you know, he did enjoy war, and he knew that about himself, and it stirred something in him, and he always rose to the occasion in an extraordinary way. It lit a fire in him, but he didn't seek it out, and he certainly didn't want any more of it for his countrymen.
You really have to wonder, after reading your book and thinking about it, if he had not been successful in that great escape, if you will, in the Transvaal, how history might have been changed.
Yeah, I do think about that a lot. But I think that there are a lot of young men throughout history who had extraordinary qualities and would have been great leaders. But I think that he was unique. Not only was he confident and determined and brave and resourceful, but he had this ability to inspire courage in other people. He believed in other people, and he told them, you know, I'm brave and resourceful, and so are you, and you can rise to the occasion as well. And people believed him, and they did extraordinary things. And that ability to have this sort of contagious courage, I think, is very rare.
We just have 1 minute left, and I know you're at work at another project. Give us some idea of what it is you're up to now.
So I'm writing about the discovery of the source of the Nile, which is a story of two men, and it's a story of their thirst for what was then the holy grail of exploration in Victorian England, and it's the story of their friendship and the betrayal of that friendship. It's really a fascinating story that I first came into contact with when I worked at National Geographic about 20 years ago, and I'm so excited to dive into it.
Well, I'm excited to read it, so let's get cracking on that.
Thank you. I will.
It's probably going to be a year or two before we see that. Candice Millard, I want to thank
you. Yeah, I would say four.
4 years? Okay, well, good enough. Thank you so much for being with us. The book is Hero of the Empire, The Boer War, A Daring Escape, and the Making of Winston Churchill. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.